This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 17th of October 2025. Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I am your presenter, Barbara Kearns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Kearns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
And the first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website. That's www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent one first on the list. Now let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Huge rise in on-street parking fines in city. Former litigator setting up cancer support centre. And actor Hugh drops in to book launch. And the first headline story, Daphne, please.
And the first headline is about parking fines, but it does have a little photograph attached to it of the side of a windscreen with one of the notorious yellow notices pinned onto it. So, here we go. The number of parking tickets in Winchester has soared since enforcement was taken over by the County Council. There was a fourfold increase between 2022-23 and 2023-24, the Chronicle has discovered. Hampshire County Council took over enforcement from the City Council in October 2023. A Freedom of Information request by the Chronicle found that between October the 1st, 2023 and October the 31st, 2024, HCC issued 16,924 on-street parking enforcement notices. This compares to October the 1st, 2022 and September the 30th, 2023, when Winchester City Council issued 4,558 on-street parking enforcement notices and 12,325 off-street parking enforcement notices. The data provided shows that the amount of on-street parking notices issued has risen by 270%. This rise in parking enforcement notices being issued has been criticised by members of the public. Dr. Simon Roffey of Swan Lane, who won an appeal against HCC after he parked in a bay that he did not know was suspended, called the parking situation in Winchester terrible. Dr. Roffey, reader in archaeology at Winchester University, said, "I don't use my car that much. I go on foot where I can. But we're persecuted. We pay for our parking permits, and the council seems to be flooding the streets with parking attendants who are buzzing around on mopeds trying to catch people out. They are suspending loads of bays with about 70% of the bays for the P zone were suspended recently, and they were ticketing people. We didn't have anywhere to park. They didn't send out any letters, despite saying that they had. I think this is wrong, and they are unaccountable for doing this. They should be investing money in other things which need doing, rather than trying to catch people out. We've dealt with Winchester City Council's parking department in the past, and they've given tickets if people were not parked properly, but they didn't come around often. They mainly monitored the car parks, and in my experience, I think they still do to an extent. With HCC, they seem to be actively trying to catch people out. Andrew Carney of City Road also voiced his concerns after he received three tickets for parking in a bay in Andover Road. The space was suspended without his knowledge after he had parked in it. He said, "I live 5 minutes away, so at any point they could have contacted me after they gave me the first ticket. If the parking attendant had just phoned me up, I could have gone there within 5 minutes and moved it. Instead, it was in their way for 3 days. It's shocking. I work near a car park and I see a lot more wardens walking around. There doesn't seem to be any leniency. This doesn't seem to be the answer. The big issue is that a lot of people don't complain. When you get the PCN or penalty charge notice, you think, well, it's a £35 fine. If you appeal against it, it doubles to 70. So many people just pay it because they don't know what their rights are. An HCC spokesperson said, "The County Council has been responsible for on-street parking in Winchester since 2023, which includes managing resident parking permits, temporary parking suspensions, and the enforcement of the on-street parking restrictions. Parking enforcement is in place to help keep streets safe for everyone, including residents, businesses and visitors. Our officers work hard to apply the rules fairly, often in busy and sometimes challenging circumstances. If a vehicle is parked incorrectly or doesn't display a valid ticket or voucher, officers do not immediately issue a ticket, but will observe it for a set period before taking action. This allows time for someone to return and either move the vehicle or correct the issue. The observation times vary depending on the situation and are outlined on our website. If no action is taken during the observation period, a penalty charge notice, PCN, may be issued and can be subsequently appealed if someone feels there are additional circumstances that we may not be aware of. In addition, we also receive many requests via our web pages from residents for us to take action against inconsiderate or unsafe parking."
Former litigators setting up cancer support centre. A woman, inspired by her own cancer battle, has vowed to create a charity to support those going through the same tough times. But she needs to raise £500,000 to do so. Nikki Lyons Xavier, 56, from Winchester, was diagnosed with breast cancer in 2023. A routine mammogram missed the cancer, and it was only when she noticed a fine web mark on her breast 3 years later that she went back for a second opinion and was told the devastating news. After being on the NHS waiting list for 4 months, she sought private help, and in August 2023, she was operated on and the cancer was removed. Nikki said she did everything possible to avoid becoming ill, eating healthily and regularly working out, not drinking or smoking, and had no risk factor for cancer. But none of it seemed to matter when it came to the disease. She even quit her job as a litigator when she was diagnosed in a bid to lower her cortisol levels. During this time, she was surprised and horrified to find out that there was no local support or local charity that could help support her or her family. This was a scary time for her and her loved ones, and she desperately searched for help and advice. She said, "I could not believe that there wasn't anything to support people. We are a city. I couldn't fathom it. Instead of sitting on my hands, I decided to do something about it instead." Nikki, spurred on by help she received by speaking to the former Winchester MP and Cancer Minister Steve Brine, has pressed on and set up Winchester Cancer Sanctuary. She wants to offer holistic support to anyone over the age of 18, male or female, who has been diagnosed with any type of cancer. She said, "We felt that there was nothing at the moment in our own community, so it made sense to provide something for everyone who is going through the same thing. Now, the sanctuary has been registered as a charity." Nikki faces a fresh battle, raising more than £500,000 needed to get it off the ground and find a suitable space. Nikki said, "The environment around you is so impactful. It needs to be quiet, relaxing, safe, comfortable. Somewhere that you want, where you want to be, but not clinical like a hospital. We will have nurses on hand who can answer questions, and people will be able to access peer support. It will be a place that people can go to where there will be other people who understand them."
Okay. Actor Hugh pops into launch book. Downton Abbey star Hugh Bonneville visited Winchester's oldest bookshop to celebrate the launch of his new children's book. He visited P&G Wells in College Street last week to promote Rory Sparks and the Elephant in the Room. During the after-school author event, Hugh entertained around 70 people of all ages with a reading from his book. He then signed copies while the celebrations continued. The signed copies are still available from P.G. Wells for fans who are unable to attend. This was part of a busy week of events at P&G Wells in the lead-up to Bookshop Day on Saturday, October the 11th. The shop also hosted poetry events from Robin Ince and Claire Pollard, reading from children's author Kirsty Applebaum, and a launch event for children's author Carrie Sellen's latest book, Pizza Pete and the Peculiar Professor, which was also attended by author Nikki Smith Dale, whose book Betty Steady and the Fidgety Wizard came out on the same day. Don't you love these titles? Hugh, best known for portraying Robert Crawley, Earl of Grantham, in the ITV historical drama series Downton Abbey, as well as his roles in top films such as Paddington and Notting Hill, is an ambassador for Bookshop Day this year. In an online post, he said, "As Rory Sparks and the Elephant in the Room hits the shelves this week, I've been diving into bookshops, each and every one a treasure trove of imagination, wonder and infinite possibilities, staffed by people passionate about stories and the joy of reading. I'm delighted to be a 2025 a Bookshop Day ambassador for Books Are My Bag, promoting the importance and pleasure of books. Visit your local bookshop and discover."
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Belle, Dorothy Ellen, passed away peacefully at West Acre Nursing Home on the 26th of September 2025, aged 85 years. Carswell, Jean, died peacefully on the 25th of September 2025, aged 92 years. Dean, Peter Harry, passed away peacefully in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Winchester, on the 1st of October, aged 97 years. Dowsett, Krista Eva Maria, passed away peacefully on the 5th of October 2025, aged 94 years. Hawker, Anne Russell, passed away peacefully at home on the 18th of September 2025, aged 86. Highfield, Peter, passed away on the 3rd of October 2025, aged 90 years. Lanny, Attilio, known as Tony, passed away on the 6th of October 2025, aged 89 years. McCabe, Josie, died peacefully at Tegfield House, Winchester, on the 5th of October 2025, aged 86 years. Minns, Albert Victor, known as Albie, passed away aged 86 on the 8th of October in Kintnox House Nursing Home. Sanger, Sheila, née Hunton, died peacefully this summer, aged 85. Windsor Aubrey, Philip, died peacefully on the 28th of September 2025, aged 92 years. Christian comment has been written by the Reverend Richard Sercombe this week. He writes that God can change your perspective on life. Thank you, Daphne.
On a recent train trip to the summit of Mount Snowdon, Eriri, the weather on that day had been a mixture of sunshine, showers and cloud. But as everyone boarded the train and the steady ascent began, the rain cleared, the skies brightened, and I could appreciate the spectacular views of God's wonderful creation. The higher we climbed, the smaller everything looked below. On reaching the summit, we could just about see the surrounding vista in every direction. However, as the descent began, the clouds lowered and the rain returned, and for a while the wonderful view was obscured. Nothing had actually changed, just our perspective. The mountains and hills were still around us, the lakes, towns and villages were still below, and people were still going about their usual routine. This reminded me that with God in our lives, we can have a better, different perspective on life. God is all-powerful, but perhaps most importantly, all-loving and caring, and we can know him as a father in our lives. We all have challenges, and the world around us portrays a lot of negativities, evil and fear, and yet we don't have to be overcome by this. God is not distant or disinterested in us as individuals, but he wants to be involved in each of our lives. He can guide us through the ups and downs of life. He offers us love, joy, and peace, and if we focus on the positive characteristics of God which Jesus showed, we can enjoy our lives more. Being thankful, contented, and generous, looking out for the needs of others and nurturing good relationships. Thinking about true, pure, and lovely things can help our minds. Let's enjoy a view of life from the mountaintop. And that's from the Reverend Richard Sercombe, Elim Church, Romsey, Elim Pentecostal Church.
And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with Councillor's bus remarks mislead, please?
Yes, and this letter's from Sylvia Hendricks. In Nick Adams King article, Use It or Lose It, he comes across as a hard-headed businessman. It's a pity he didn't adopt this approach in his dealings with the Blue Star One bus operator, when he and his team negotiated using government bus money for the Blue Star 1 Southampton to Winchester to provide buses every 10 minutes. Instead, it would have been better to contract Blue Star to provide a bus service covering Knightwood and Valley Park. Approximately 7,300 people who now have no buses at all. Hampshire County Council received extra money through the Bus Services Improvement Fund to improve the bus networks to connect communities which had been lost over the years. This has been ignored. The number one Blue Star bus stops are too far away for the majority to walk from this area, 2 or 3 miles for some residents. Not everyone can drive or has access to a car, and no one knows when they may find they are unable to drive. His remarks about the cost of subsidies for the 46 stagecoach bus, which ran to Winchester, are misleading, as cuts over the years to services made the bus virtually unusable. The last straw came in 2024-2025, when the bus only ran once a day in term time with no returning service. Only in the school holidays was there a bus going to Winchester in the morning with a return service. Because the afternoon bus was unusable, it made the subsidy cost high. This bus initially had a good route, covering Southampton and Winchester city centres and communities along the way, plus 2 hospitals and a sixth form college. The Salisbury XR bus mentioned by him also receives funding from Winchester Council, from Wiltshire Council, and so is not comparable. Many bus routes need subsidies, as bus operators cannot cover their costs completely themselves, but that does not mean people don't need the buses and find them unnecessary. I hear about people in their 90s driving reluctantly and people with walking aids trying to walk 30 minutes to a bus stop. I hope HCC will revise cuts to services such as the 46. They may like to consider that Wiltshire Council subsidise 40% of their bus routes as they think it is essential, while I was advised that by HCC that they supported 9% of bus routes in March. And that's from Sylvia Hendricks, Valley Park, Eastleigh.
Tram plan. This is from John Carter in Bitton, Southampton. The Chronicle's, The Chronicle's sister paper, the Southern Daily Echo, recently published an article regarding a proposal for a new tram system for the Greater Southampton area to coincide with the new unitary council that will come into effect in the coming year. There have been various positive and negative reactions to the suggestion, as you would expect. Having checked out the details of this proposal, I would like to endorse it and highlight some of the misconceptions associated with it. There are no rails or overhead cables. The electric tram runs on rubber wheels on a bogie, like a train, for a smooth, comfortable ride. They run on existing main roads with a sensor following a dotted white line, not side roads, using bus lanes where in use. Existing buses would still serve estates and side roads, etc., and of course run along main roads also, though probably fewer buses. The average wait for a new super tram is calculated at approximately 6 minutes. They also send a signal ahead as they approach traffic lights. If red, they change to green. If green, they remain until the tram has passed. All major destinations, including hospitals and all shopping centres, could be accessed quickly and efficiently. The cost of such a system is relatively small, with no major infrastructure changes required. Another letter in Monday's Echo from ex-councillor Andrew Pope bemoans the lack of park and ride facilities in the city. He is absolutely correct. These types of car parks, strategically located around the edges of the city, would work hand in hand with a new rapid transport system. Southampton must be forward-thinking with the transport system to complement our position as the major regional centre for the South. We must attract investment into the city. A modern, fast, eco-friendly transport network that encourages fewer car journeys is a win for passengers, the city, and the environment. So come on, Council. John Carter, Bittern, Southampton.
And now Keith Walker writes about trolley buses. I read with interest the article proposing the implementation of a super tram, Daily Echo, October the 7th. Although I live in Cardiff and have relations in Hampshire, I organise a group restoring trolley buses and would like to propose these as an alternative. There appear to be those in authority who have little concept of the implications but believe trams are the answer because other UK councils have them. These super trams run on identical power to trolley buses. The infrastructure, that is, underground cables, the above street overhead wiring and support traction poles are the same, apart from one additional wire for trolley buses. Now you dig up all the roads and lay track for the trams, which is an additional cost with ongoing maintenance, and if a tram has a malfunction, all the following trams come to a standstill, causing disruption to services. Since trolley buses were phased out in the early 1970s, there have been major advances in the infrastructure for trolley buses, whereby they can have reduced impact on their overhead, where the booms can be automatically retracted and the vehicles run on batteries until returning to the wires and recharging for the return journey. Trolley buses have traction batteries, and should there be a problem, they are able to move to the side of the road, and following trolley buses can provide an uninterrupted service. As to carrying capacity, I recommend readers to view on their laptops bi- and tri-model trolley buses used on the continent. And that comes from Keith Walker, Project Coordinator, Cardiff and South Wales Trolley Bus Project.
And the debate goes on. The next letter from Crawford Wright is out about Bus 69 route change disaster. My wife and I were regular users of the 69 bus into Winchester and Fareham. The changes to the route are a disaster. Most people travelling to Winchester used to alight at the top of the city, either at Southgate Street or Jewry Street. The latter made access to the Ark, Library, Hampshire Record Office and the railway station easy. One could also get off at St Cross and catch the number one bus into Southampton. The new route, departing and arriving at the Broadway, is inconvenient and there is virtually no seating for elderly people like my wife, who recently had a replacement knee operation. The previous use of the bus station provided reasonable seating for the elderly. Returning from Winchester on the original route, one had the options of boarding at Winchester Bus Station, Marks and Spencer's or Jewry Street. Now it is the Broadway only. The new route to Fareham is also ridiculous. On the original route, the bus stopped close to Sainsbury's, but now goes direct to the bus station, which is at least half a mile away. Previously, it also went direct to Fareham Railway Station, but this stop has now been cut out, and it is now some 20 minutes walk from the bus station. So, now the 69 serves neither Winchester or Fareham Railway Stations. Hampshire County Council's stated policy on transport is to integrate road and rail. So the rerouting of the 69 does not comply with its own policy. Southwest Trains are advertising for us to use the trains. We would love to, if only we could get to a station. passengers were happy with the original 69 route and timings. It provided a good, frequent service that we were all satisfied with. To reroute it via the M3 motorway is ridiculous, as it serves no one, and when the motorway is closed in either direction, there will be no service to anywhere. Here in the Meon Valley, we have already lost the bus services to Petersfield and the Hedge End Southampton service. Now we have a near useless service to Winchester and Fareham. Would the politicians who are supposed to be serving us be brave enough to give us passengers the original excellent 69 service? And that's from Crawford Wright, who lives in Swanmore.
Council need to do due diligence. This is from Judith Mary Martin of Romsey Road, Winchester. While Winchester City Council contemplates the loss of their preferred bidder, McCarthy and Stone, at the Barrion Depot site, perhaps I could remind them of the last time the council tried to deal with them, in the 1990s. Cinema fans fondly remember the old Odeon on North Walls. The site was sold and the cinema demolished with no requirement for a replacement cinema. McCarthy and Stone were the buyers in the fairly early days of the boom in catering for well-heeled old people. Their plans were agreed by the council, the site was cleared, in the process of which the backbone of the wing of the adjacent reference library, now Austin House, was broken. The developers realised they'd bitten off more than they could chew and they ditched the project, leaving the building about 1 metre above ground. Presumably, they'd had an insufficient ground survey. It's hard to say, as it was notoriously difficult and expensive to get any information out of the company. At least on that occasion, the council got the site, was able to build social as opposed to private sheltered housing. Richard Moss House, named after the Victorian Member of Parliament. The Highcliffe Community Forum has been tireless in trying to persuade the council to provide something of social value at the depot rather than profit to a private developer. Winchester is littered with sites which could have been usefully developed for the public good if only the council hadn't been obsessed with private bidders. When it's proposed its own development, it's been an expensive disaster. The corner house springs to mind, the little house on Tower Street, the old goods shed on Barfield Coast, on Close. It no longer has design or development expertise, and past attempts to employ an officer to fix a site haven't turned out well. I believe there's now more hope if only public professionals can be allowed to do their job. There's one officer I know who could start by revisiting the depot site. They could also do some sharp due diligence on future bidders. Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And now Simon Lever writes about countryside under threat. A large amount of our pristine countryside is already being taken over by thousands of houses, including new towns, planned around the greater area of Winchester without considering long-term effects. Huge solar farms will have a similar effect, annihilating countryside which can never be replaced. The scale is beyond imagination. Further, millions of pounds are to be invested, much, if not all, of the equipment imported from the same country that supplies wind farms, adding to environmental destruction and the increasing cost of domestic and industrial power. The combination of expanding house building and destroying rural areas is blatantly irresponsible. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And Ian Cole writes about how the hosepipe ban shows businesses are unfit. So, we learn from Southern Water that we may see the hosepipe ban lifted before the end of November. This is a situation without precedent and is clear proof that the infrastructure that provides our water supply is woefully inadequate, principally because Southern Water have failed to invest in additional storage and distribution facilities since privatisation, as the population they serve has increased dramatically and house building has risen to numbers unseen in a generation. This summer, the drought brought Southern Water to within an ace of causing irreversible damage to the River Test. If local authorities continue to allow new housing at the current rate and we experience further droughts, and Southern Water continue to ignore their duties and responsibilities, there is a real risk that the rivers in our area will be destroyed. This would amount to destruction of the environment by corporate greed. And that's from Ian Cole, Western Road, West End.
Scouting lessons. This is from Terry Lankford in Hythe. At scouting in the 1950s and 1960s, we learned to cook on open fire, navigation skills of reading ordnance survey maps, and compass points. We also learned how to recognise trees by the shapes of the leaves and all about wildlife. Our scout leader was a professor of botany. On the first night of camp, he used to tell us ghost stories of the surrounding place we were staying at, with his face lit up by the campfire flames. It made the boys settle down early and not want to venture out at night. In the morning and evening, we would raise and lower the Union flag. We also earned badges for preparing and cooking food, cycling, swimming, art, first aid, fire safety, hobbies and many others, giving us good skills for later life. It taught us to be self-reliant and patriotic to our country. I'm sure many other retired men that shared the same experience had the best years of their life. It is good that scouting is now mixed for male and female, and with the current affairs in the UK and the direction this is taking, what legacy are we leaving for future generations? Terry Lankford, Hythe.
Dr. Tony Saunders' letter is headed "Research Shows Changing Times." I have been researching my family history and discovered that one of my ancestors was John Mayne, a Scottish Covenanter. He carried the Covenanter's flag at the Battle of Bothwell Bridge in 1679, was captured and hanged. He is remembered as one of the Glasgow Martyrs. The Scottish Covenanters were protesting against the introduction of the Book of Common Prayer, BCP. I am a regular worshipper at the early morning communion service at St. Cross Church, which is a moving service in an ancient and peaceful setting. The service is based on the BCP. From an old saying, times change and we change with them. And that's from Dr. Tony Saunders, Main Road, Otterbourne.
And that's all the letters this week. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old-style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll carry on now with the editorial comment, first person, Bulgarum, and we have a letter from Westminster this week. The editor heads up her article this week with "Council Must Ditch Officious Attitude." The County Council will deny it, but there is little doubt that it is treating parking enforcement in Winchester as a cash cow. Our front page story shows that the number of parking tickets in the city has rocketed since enforcement was taken over by the County Council in 2023. Its staff are seemingly penalising any infringement. There was a time when a city council warden would have a quiet word and cut the motorists some slack, but no longer. One city centre resident said they feel persecuted by the officiousness of the county's attitude. There is the argument that any breaking of the rules is liable to be punished. That would have greater weight, but our report shows how many of these tickets are being issued unfairly. People are being penalised when the council has not informed them of changes, such as the temporary suspension of parking bays. As one resident quoted in the story says, the council appears to be relying on people preferring to pay a £35 fine than go through the hassle and stress of appealing the fine. It would be hard to think of a better way for a local authority to alienate local people. Just get a grip on better informing residents about any suspension of residents-only parking and then direct its staff to take a more relaxed attitude. It would do everyone's stress levels a lot of good and make Winchester a pleasanter place to live and do business. And now George Hayter writes about a share of success in first person this week. Staffley.
Just one day's till training was all I got before the biggest change in UK currency for more than five centuries. I was one of the hospitality workers spearheading the introduction of decimal coinage 54 years ago. It was a Monday in February 1971 that Britain abandoned the shillings and pence that had constituted the nation's money since Tudor times. As a barman in London's Leicester Square, it was my job to explain the revolutionary new cash to customers as I counted out their change in numbers new to them. Since the 1500s, the public had had their brain power tested by not two, but three levels in the currency, pence, shillings, and pounds. As if to deliberately make calculations difficult, the system had neither 10 pennies, written as 10d, in 1 shilling, nor 10 shillings in 1 pound. Instead, there were for some reason 12 pennies in a shilling, and 20 shillings in a pound. That was tricky. Try adding 1 pound 16 shillings and 7 pence to 22 pounds 13 shillings and 9 pence. In brackets, the answer is 35 pounds 10 shillings and 4 pence. Thankfully, the ancient headache of pennies and shillings was replaced overnight by the easy-peasy system we have now, with just two levels, 100 new pence in 1 pound. Advance advertising and educational campaigns by the government tried to make the population ready for the new currency, with the crucial changeover planned for the quietest trading day in the week, in the quietest month of the year. In Hennecke's beer keller in Leicester Square, we nervous bar staff and our alcohol-handicapped customers had no trouble mastering the new measure of value. The rest of the country found it surprisingly easy too. The new money slipped into popular acceptance painlessly. Although UK currency has been modernised, the same cannot be said for measures of other things, like weight, volume and distance. Each of those has two incompatible systems running alongside: grams and ounces, litres and gallons, metres and feet. The former, all metric, are glorious in their simplicity. The latter, complex relics. One decimal, the other not. One called metric, the other imperial. Before metrication, countries, and even regions within countries, had their own local units for weighing and measuring. That hampered trade and cooperation. France took the lead in standardisation and simplification by inventing the metric system during the French Revolution, fully adopting it in 1795. Since then, metric has become the only official measuring in almost every nation on Earth, except the US, Canada, and Britain. Here the job has been only half done, with industry adopting metric, but generally with the public still labouring under the old system, for everything from milk to miles, from body weight to body height, and from acres to beer. Imperial units are still woven into British life. The ease of our coinage decimalisation in 1971 shows that switching units need not be difficult or expensive. On metricating mileage, for example, a road sign now saying 1.5 miles would not need to be replaced until due for renewal, when its placement might still read 1.5 miles, but with a tiny 2.4 kilometres written alongside. The replacement for that road sign might make the kilometre figure bigger. With the replacement after that, the reference to miles could finally disappear. I think full metrication would give Britain a modern, successful look and could even boost productivity. The country would become more efficient. We spend too much time wondering how many kilograms there are in a stone, converting kilometres into miles, and trying to add amounts like 2 foot 10 inches to 3 foot 7 inches. Clients express their needs in feet, and tradesmen have to convert those needs to metres. It takes time, and it all adds up. Education will be quicker. Kids would no longer be confused by the yard, the hundredweight, and that most picturesque of our antique units, the horsepower. Time for old units to trot into history at a speed measured in kilometres per hour.
And Nick has the Belgarum article this week. A load of rubbish, Nick?
800 bags of litter cleared. A major roadside litter pick has resulted in approximately 800 bags of litter being removed from the A31. The clean-up took place between September the 10th and the 16th, along the 30-mile stretch of the road from Bishop Sutton Roundabout to the Hen and Chicken Inn, and was carried out by East Hampshire North, EHN. The litter pick was coordinated to coincide with planned road closures by Hampshire County Council's highways team. Councillor Richard Millard, leader of East Hampshire District Council, said, "This litter pick is a great example of collaboration between EHN and the HCC highways teams. They've been able to get on with their work while our litter teams have cleared significant amounts of litter. Goes without saying that we would prefer to have collected very little, but litter is a serious problem on the road." Among the rubbish collected were larger discarded items such as tyres, cones, mattresses and plastic sheeting. The council has urged the public to use bins or take rubbish home, especially if no bin is available. It also reminded residents not to leave waste beside full bins and encourage reporting of overflowing bins through its website. And needless to say, that piece is accompanied by a lovely picture of a huge great pile of rubbish with a cone stuck on the top of it inside a white skip.
Thank you. And we have a letter from Westminster this week from the Winchester MP Danny Chambers. Paul. Thank you.
"This month I've been fighting to protect our green spaces and natural environment. Our national parks are under threat. With the government desperate to grow the economy, we're being tempted by developers to sacrifice our green spaces and national parks like the South Downs. I launched an urgent petition, and within just a few days, over 1,200 local residents made their voices heard. Alongside the many nature organisations fighting to protect the parks, we took our message to the Environment Secretary, and thankfully the government backed down, ensuring that protections for national parks were maintained. After we've seen eye-watering bill rises of over 50% already, I almost couldn't believe the news that Southern Water successfully pressured regulators to allow additional bill rises. It all just feels like a rigged game. After years of failure, for them to demand even more money is as disgusting as the sewage they continue to dump in our rivers. It's past time we scrapped Ofwat and replaced it with a regulator actually willing to take on the water company bosses. As well as challenging the government and Southern Water to do their part, we can all help to improve our local environment as well. I joined the Winchester Litter Pickers for a morning tidying up the streets. They really embrace the community spirit and have not only helped keep Winchester streets clean, but created a wonderful way for people to meet each other and socialise. I highly recommend people getting involved with a local litter picking group, and if there isn't one around, to help set one up. It was an honour to be able to speak at our party conference recently about our successes. We demonstrated that opposition MPs really can get things done. My animal welfare bill passed through the House of Commons and is on track to become law, stopping, among other things, the abuse and illegal smuggling of dogs and cats. When I was first elected, I promised to be a local champion, and after my first year as your MP, my team and I have been able to directly help residents over 10,000 times. We've worked with schools and parents to ensure children's education needs are met. We've supported local businesses and farmers with grant applications. We've taken on energy and water companies for overcharging customers and polluting our environment. And we've listened to people's concerns on national and international issues so we could bring their voice to Parliament. Whether it was our support for Ukraine or working to stop the killing in Gaza, I've listened to all sides and spoken out. As I enter my second year as Winchester's Member of Parliament, I promise to keep on listening and fighting on the issues that really matter to people. So if you have any concerns or issues I can help with, please get in touch at dannychambers.mp@parliament.uk.
Thank you, Yvonne. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. First thing is on Saturday the 18th, we've got an organ recital by Gerard Brooks. That is at the Methodist Central Hall. Oh, he's at the United Church at in Jury Street, Winchester. It's by Gerard Brooks, who is the Director of Music at Methodist Central Hall, Westminster. Doesn't say about tickets, that's at 7:30. On Wednesday the 22nd, we have the Ripper Files. This is at the Theatre Royal, and Rumpus Theatre presents a spine-tingling whodunit, the Ripper Files, based on the world's most famous case. That is on both at 2:30 for a matinee or 7:30 in the evening. Advance notice on Thursday the 23rd of October, there's a firework night, a fireworks display at 5:30 p.m. at Barton Farm Primary School. So things could be busy around Barton Farm on that evening. On Saturday the 25th, there's a festival of folk. This is at 6 p.m, traditional tunes from Britain and beyond, and this is at Christchurch, Winchester. There's And on Saturday the 11th of November, the Alsford Community Choir Remembrance Concert. The Remembrance Concert will have includes pieces by Vaughan Williams and Purcell and other composers. That's at the Church of St John the Baptist, East Street in Alsford. And just one more thing, on Sunday the 26th of October, for anyone to take the children or grandchildren to, the Gruffalo's Child is at 1:30 p.m. and that's at the Theatre Royal in Jury Street. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 18th of October, the sun will set at 6:07 p.m. and on Wednesday the 22nd of October, the sun will rise at 7:40 a.m. and will set at 5:59 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Daphne, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes, and the first item is headed Site is Back on Market. I think we've already touched on this in the letters, but this is a little article. A controversial development site has been put back on the market after a sudden withdrawal from a previous developer. Winchester Civic Chiefs held a cabinet meeting on Tuesday, October the 14th, to decide whether to approve the remarketing of the Bar End Depot following the withdrawal of McCarthy and Stone. The committee unanimously voted in favour of remarketing the site, which will begin at the end of October, and a new decision will be made in January. Remarketing will invite formal bids for a planning policy complaint scheme to include housing, a convenience store and an element of care. According to a WCC officer's report, this is the same mix of uses that were included in the previous marketing. Conservative group leader Caroline Horrell said, "We are now back to the drawing board. How can it be so difficult to manage redevelopment on a site like this? We know redevelopment doesn't happen unless you want it enough, which is what happened with the Sport and Leisure Centre. We are all fed up with waiting, and soon we will be out of time with local government reorganisation around the corner." Council leader Martin Todd said, "It's obviously a disappointment that we haven't been able to move ahead at the pace we originally planned for this particular scheme, but the remarketing of this site will allow us to move ahead." Civic chiefs said McCarthy and Stone withdrew from the process due to the market changes within the retirement, living and care home industry.
Digital help for patients. Digital care coordinators are helping patients across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. The coordinators are available in GP practices to help people get set up online and on the NHS app. They can teach patients to install and use digital tools like the NHS app, helping them navigate its many features. More than 62% of residents in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight currently use the NHS app to order prescriptions, make appointments and view their test results. The app provides a simple, secure way to access a range of NHS services. Kay, a digital care coordinator in a Hampshire GP practice, said, "I have been working as a digital care coordinator for the last year, and I really enjoy working with our patients to ensure that they get the best out of the NHS app and are able to use all of its features. There are so many people in our community who struggle with technology, and my role allows me to show them how to use the app to order repeat prescriptions, book appointments, view their health records, and many other things. I see patients both at the practice and in their own homes, helping them to realise the benefits of being able to log in and use the app to help with their medical care. The NHS app allows patients to view their GP health record, helping them manage their condition without needing to phone their GP surgery. It also enables access to consultation notes, test results, and future appointments.
Celebrating getting rid of all pesticides. The Watercress Company has celebrated 25 years since it decided to stop using pesticides on its farm, on its crops. The company, which has farms across Hampshire and Dorset, made the decision in the year 2000. Tom Amory, now managing director of the company, said, "We wanted to be the best in industry both then and now. We had a vision to be pesticide free, so in 2000 took the bold decision to remove all sprays from our UK operations. Over 25 years, we have been colonised by 1.7 billion insects, which we don't see as pests. Instead, we have harnessed them to help production. I really feel that we have taken watercress farming back to nature and how it should be. It was the way our forefathers farmed before the agricultural revolution of 1945, when industrial farming, pesticides and fertilisers were introduced to maximise production. I strongly believe that our way of farming is not only environmentally good, but morally and ethically superior. We strongly feel that our story would appeal to the growing numbers of consumers who really care about pesticide use, but until we can show it on our packs, they just can't be told about our achievements." The latest report, published in September, confirms for the seventh consecutive year that the species present were typical of a chalk stream with good macro invertebrate diversity and high water quality scores. It is estimated that 1.7 billion insects now thrive on the 16 hectares of watercress beds owned by TWC in the UK. Protect insect life and ensure as few as possible end up on a consumer's plate. TWC has developed its own harvester with shaker belts that gently agitate the crop when it's been cut, removing the majority of insects by bouncing them off and returning them to the watercress beds.
Tribute to the inspiring and kind Martin Neary. Martin Neary, former organist at Winchester Cathedral, has died aged 85. Martin Neary was crucial in growing Winchester's music from the excellent foundations laid by Alwyn Surplis. He made music with all London's orchestras, bringing these orchestras to Winchester and in turn the choir to London. Martin put Winchester on the religious musical map through songs of praise and television documentaries on ITV, Southern TV and the BBC. Martin instigated international touring at Winchester, with multiple tours to France, including Notre Dame in Paris, the United States, including St John the Divine in New York, Carnegie Hall, the Kennedy Centre and Washington National Cathedral, in Australia, Brazil, Canada and elsewhere. Amidst all this, he maintained the highest of standards in evensong and Sunday services in the cathedral. Multiple awards included a platinum disc for Lloyd Webber's Requiem, around 30 records, whilst prominent services included the Easter 1979 Royal Maundy service. Yet Martin was not just a musician. At first, he studied theology at Cambridge before switching to music, as he felt this was the most effective means of expression. The cathedral choir's services and performances overseas encouraged many from where Winchester had toured to come to Winchester in search of the cathedral, her worship and her music. Martin had excellent relationships with both Bishop John Taylor and Dean Michael Stancliffe. This symbiotic relationship worked greatly for the betterment of both music and mission in Winchester. Above all, he was kind, sympathetic and inspiring to his choristers. Canon Rowley, interim dean, adds, "The 15 years of Martin Neary's tenure as Master of the Music are fondly remembered by many musicians still connected to the living tradition at Winchester Cathedral today. We give thanks for his faithful and distinguished service. As we remember him and his family in our prayers, let us also pray for those who in our own times are called to nurture the choral tradition in worship."
Sites set to be sold to safeguard future. A 900-year-old charity is proposing to sell three properties to help secure its long-term future. St John's Winchester provides almshouse accommodation for more than 100 elderly people and those living with dementia in the city. The charity has announced the proposed sale of three properties: 51 Southgate Street, 23 Southgate Street, and the Moorside Building off Union Street. The funds raised from these sales will be reinvested into the almshouse accommodation to ensure the charity's long-term sustainability. With the three large properties in the city centre, the proceeds are likely to be a seven-figure sum. Tom Bissett, Chief Executive of St John's Winchester, said, "These decisions are about making sure everything we do is focused on our charitable purpose, while at the same time future-proofing the organisation against a range of factors, including rising costs. By releasing funds from these buildings, the trustees can reinvest in what matters most, helping residents in our almshouses to live independently and preserving the historic buildings we are privileged to care for in the heart of Winchester. The proceeds from the property sales will be used to maintain and improve the almshouses, develop new services for the elderly and those living with dementia, and ensure the long-term sustainability of the charity's work." The charity, one of England's oldest, is committed to adapting its services and investments to meet contemporary needs while respecting its historic legacy. Mr. Bissett added, "The sale of the Moorside building marks an important step in this process. While the property has served St John's well in the past, the trustees believe that the greatest value for the charity and the people it supports now lies in releasing the capital tied up in the site and redirecting it towards core services, our almshouse and dementia support." Moorside opened in 1996 and closed in 2021 after it became unsuitable for modern care. St John's Winchester ensures that each asset contributes directly to sustaining and improving its charitable services for present and future generations. The charity also has plans to create a thriving community for the people that they support. This includes supporting those with dementia, providing housing and other services to ensure that people can live active and fulfilling lives in their later years, and responding to the growing need for dementia support.
The Animal and Plant Health Agency has confirmed that bird flu has been detected near Stockbridge. An avian influenza prevention zone with mandatory biosecurity measures is also in force across Great Britain. All bird keepers must follow the stringent biosecurity measures in addition to following any protection surveillance restrictions in their area to prevent further outbreaks. All poultry on the premises will be humanely culled. According to the National Health Service, avian influenza or bird flu is an infection that mainly affects birds, though the virus can spread to humans through close contact, and it can be fatal, but it's very rare in the United Kingdom. A 3 kilometre controlled zone has been declared around the premises near Stockbridge to prevent any further spread. As a result, all visitors, poultry and eggs entering or leaving the site have to be recorded. Owners within the controlled... Well, anyway, that's all for that.
Pizza shops are all looking for a slice of the action. Independent pizza restaurants across Winchester have formed an alliance to support each other. The alliance consists of the Pizza Tavern in Bridge Street, Five Boroughs Pizza in Jury Street, and Pie Pizza in Stockbridge Road. Mike Smith of the Pizza Tavern and Alex Abrey of Five Boroughs Pizza said that the alliance came about as a way for the businesses to support one another and increase the number of customers coming through their doors. Alex said, "We are all independent. Winchester loves independent businesses, but it is tough out there. It dawned on us that we should have a pizza alliance. We have teamed up for the month. I came into the Pizza Tavern on Wednesday and it was great." As part of this alliance, the businesses are running a special event throughout October, with Alex explaining, "For the month itself, we have started something where people can collect a stamp from each shop, and if they collect enough, they can get a T-shirt with a logo on it. And we are posting about the other restaurants on our social media pages as well. It is to show customers that we are here." Mike said, "We have had a couple of people coming in and getting their stamps. It's good. We just needed to get a bit more traction." The restaurants have a through line through Winchester. It feels like people are travelling through the city. We're at the bottom, Five Boroughs is in the centre, and Pie is at the top. You can come along and get different styles of pizza. He added, "Even the vibes of the restaurants are very different. We have hip-hop and slices, and the Pizza Tavern has candles and full pizzas, and Pie does stuff with sourdough." While Pie has been in Winchester since 2014, both the Pizza Tavern and Five Boroughs Pizza celebrate their one-year anniversaries in October. Mike said, "We are here. We have survived the year, which is very important for businesses. Everyone thinks that you're making lots of money when you open a pizza restaurant, but it's not quite like that." Alex said, "We have all stated that it is nice that this relation has started to support each other. That's the whole point of banding together. We help each other." Alex and Mike said that they hope the alliance can continue in future, along with the T-shirt promotion. And there's a really nice photograph of Alex and Mike sitting together at a counter in one of the restaurants, hard to tell which one, smiling and looking very happy about it.
A star-studded panto cast revealed for 2025. The Theatre Royal Winchester has announced the cast for its upcoming pantomime Puss in Boots. Theatre fans will be pleased to hear that Julian Eardley, the theatre's resident dame, will be returning for his 16th pantomime at the venue, now as Dame Dolly Duster. Julian has previously delighted audiences in roles such as Fairy Kindheart in Cinderella and the cowardly Lion in The Wizard of Oz. Liam Watson, known for his comedic prowess, will be joining Julian once again. Last winter, he played Mother Goose's son Jack, and this year he will be taking on the role of Colin, a young man with no money and no hope of winning the princess. Actor-musician Andrew Wheaton will be returning to the theatre. After playing Squire Squeezum and a heavenly Elvis in last year's production, this year he will be taking on the roles of Colin's father, the Miller, and Old King Cole. Jess Lobo, a newcomer to Winchester's pantomime scene, will play the role of Princess Claribel. Jess's stage credits include playing Goldilocks and Little Red Riding Hood in The Jolly Christmas Postman and the stepsister in Sensory Cinders. Beaker Selina will be playing Colin's faithful cat, Puss. Beaker, who is based in Southampton, has performed at the London Palladium and starred in adaptations of The Wedding Singer and High School Musical. Emma Fenney will take on the role of the wicked sorceress Fluella Frostbite. Her stage credits include Fawlty Towers, the play, Twelfth Night and Wuthering Heights. Jack Oliver returns as Colin's brother Dick, the ogre, and part of the community ensemble with Maria Kiriakou playing Colin's brother Tom and also acting as a puppeteer. The cast will be accompanied by a community ensemble of local performers. Puss in Boots tells the story of Colin, the poor miller's son, whose life takes a turn for the better when his cat Puss proves to be no ordinary feline. The pantomime is suitable for families and is packed with original songs, jokes, live music and audience participation. Puss in Boots has been written and directed by Robin Belfield, with music by Simon Slater. The pantomime will run from November the 29th, 2025, until the 4th of January, 2026. Oh, yes, it will.
Paul, follow that.
Yes. Green Party announced their sole mayoral election candidate for next year. There's a lovely photograph. Well, there's a pleasing photograph of her, Anna Collar. I should think she's mid-30s, late-30s. Associate Professor and Archaeologist Anna Collar, who lives in Lyndhurst, is the Green Party's candidate for New Forest, New Forest West, but also the mayoral candidate now in next year. Following the announcement, she said, "I am delighted to be the Green Party's candidate for mayor, and this is a wonderful place to live, but it has been let down by the old parties for far too long. We need a mayor who will champion bold ideas to get our region back on track. The new mayor has a lot to do. We must invest in our communities and protect our natural world. Public services have been stripped back to breaking point, to the point that many are looking for a new alternative." Her selection comes as the Green Party's membership has surged in recent weeks, surpassing 90,000 members for the first time and passing the Lib Dems in membership across the UK. She attained a bit of local fame last year when a video that she recorded went viral when she'd spoken against sitting Conservative MP Desmond Swain during a hustings event. The video gained more than 1 million views on social media. That's her claim to distinction. Thank you.
EV charging hub is named best in UK. A Winchester electric vehicle, EV, charging hub has been recognised as the best in the UK at two industry awards. Instavolt's Winchester Superhub was named Charging Destination of the Year at the EVES Award, that's EVIES, but it doesn't tell me what it actually stands for, in 2025. The site also won EV Infrastructure Project of the Year at the 2025 Solar and Storage Live Awards. The location has been shortlisted at the Royal Town Planning Institute Awards for Planning Excellence and the National Transport Awards. So that's a lot of awards. The Superhub is the largest ultra-rapid charging facility in the country, with 44 chargers and 870 solar panels. It also has on-site battery storage and a cafe and children's play area for visiting families. InstaVolt CEO Delvin Lane said, "To see our Winchester Superhub receive national recognition is a proud moment for our team and a testament to our commitment to building the infrastructure Britain needs to go electric. This site sets the benchmark for what EV charging can be: sustainable, reliable, and driver-friendly." The location, just off the A34 and near the M3, provides a key link for drivers across the south. It is powered entirely by renewable energy. And there's an astonishing photograph. I think it must have been taken by drone because it's looking some way down at this huge site with, umpteen chargers. Nearly all of them have got a car attached. And masses and masses of solar panels completely surrounding it.
Step into Jane Austen's world at the City Tea Shop. A Winchester tea shop is giving residents a taste of the past by serving teas that Jane Austen would have enjoyed. Char teas, located a short distance from the house where the author spent her final days, shared how people can recreate the Regency era ritual. During Austen's lifetime, from 1775 to 1817, all tea in Britain came from China. Her go-to teas would have been smoky Lapsang Souchong, rich Bohea, and delicate Yunnan. Stuart Hazeldine, a tea expert at Char Teas, said, "Jane Austen would almost certainly have drunk Chinese black teas. Smoky teas, like Lapsang Souchong, travelled well and stayed fresh, while lighter Yunnan teas would have been familiar too. Brewing them properly was part of the experience, just as important as the flavour." Drinking tea in Austen's day was more than just a habit, it was a cherished tradition. Cream was poured into the porcelain cups first to prevent them from cracking. Water was brought just to the boil and the tea was left to steep for 3 to 5 minutes. Mr. Hazeldine said, "These small details made every cup special. It wasn't just about taste, it was about enjoying the moment, just as Jane Austen would have done." In honour of Winchester's 250-year celebration since Austen's birth, Char Teas has crafted 3 special blends inspired by her life and stories: Regency Breakfast, Long Walks at Longbourn, and Making Matches. These blends are designed to offer a taste of the era. Char Teas encourages locals to embrace this simple Regency ritual as part of the city's anniversary festivities. Mr. Hazeldine added, "Tea has always been a companion to literature, offering a pause for reflection. Enjoying a cup while reading Austen is one of the simplest ways to step into her world, right here in Winchester." The Tea Shop's initiative is part of broader celebrations in Winchester to honour one of its most famous residents.
Two machines tunnelling beneath Hampshire have been given names with a special meaning. The winning names for the tunnel boring machines were announced by Southern Water following a regional competition for a water infrastructure project. The machines now at work beneath the county will help install Southern Water's 19-kilometre Southampton Link main water pipeline, which will connect the city to the Otterbourne water supply works. The machines have been named after the Celtic goddess Anne Castor and the 19th century fossil hunter Mary Anning. Both names were selected from dozens of suggestions put forward by children across the region. Mary Anning, suggested by 15-year-old Etty, was the pioneering fossil hunter whose discovery along the Dorset coast included the first complete ichthyosaurus and plesiosaurus skeletons. She was also the inspiration for the famous tongue twister. She sells seashells on the seashore. The shells she sells are seashells, I'm sure, etc. And Custer, chosen by 13-year-old Evie, was a goddess worshipped in Roman Britain and associated with the nearby River Itchen. Both young winners received a £50 gift voucher. The new underground pipeline will run from Otterbourne to Yew Hill Reservoir near Winchester, and then south to Roanham's water supply works on the outskirts of Southampton. This is being done to improve the resilience of our water network, making any future loss of water incidents less likely and helping us take less water from the precious environments of the River Test and the River Itchen.
Christmas is just around the corner. Depends how you feel about that. But work has already begun on Winchester Cathedral's annual Christmas market. Workmen have been seen laying the foundations for the market's chalets in the cathedral close. The chalets are yet to be erected, but are expected to be constructed in the coming weeks. The cathedral has received more applications from traders for this year's market than ever before. It is a hugely popular attraction. Yolly Cresswell, head of commercial at Winchester Cathedral, said at the time, "With such high volume of applications and the exceptional quality of traders on offer, the selection process has been incredibly competitive this year. And the panel never find it easy, turning away excellent traders. Striking the right balance between welcoming new traders and maintaining the much-loved consistency of the market is always a careful decision and never taken lightly. We are thrilled by the ongoing success and popularity of Winchester Cathedral's Christmas market and grateful to all who apply to be part of it. The Christmas market opens on Friday, November the 21st and runs until Monday, December the 22nd. Meanwhile, inside the cathedral, Christmas concerts, services and activities will take place throughout the season.
Olympians and military. A new exhibition is shining a light on the powerful connections between military service and Olympic achievement. Titled From Front Lines to Finish Lines, the display is now open at the Royal Logistic Corps, RLC, Museum in Worthy Down. Elliot Broadbridge, archivist at the RLC Museum, said, "This was a really interesting exhibition to curate. The RLC and its forming corps contain a wealth of athletes who have competed at the Olympic Games over the years. The exhibition tells the stories of more than 20 Olympians who served in the Royal Logistic Corps or its predecessor units, both highlighting both their sporting and military accomplishments. Among those featured are rower David Haig Thomas of the Royal Army Service Corps, and boxer Henry Cooper, who completed his national service with the Royal Army Ordnance Corps. The display includes objects lent to the museum, such as the bicycle ridden by Victor Louis Johnson when he won a gold medal at the 1908 London Olympic Games." Mr. Broadbridge added, "The museum aims to inform and educate the public about the wide range of roles undertaken by the Royal Logistic Corps and the corps that formed it. The museum is open Tuesday to Saturday from 9:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. and is open to the public because it's just outside the entrance to Worthy-Down Camp.
Stars will be in festive play. A familiar face from children's television long ago will be taking to the stage in a festive radio play. Peter Purves, best known for presenting Blue Peter in the 1970s, will star as Charles Dickens in the radio play A Christmas Carol at the Theatre Royal on November the 16th. He will appear alongside Doctor Who legends Colin Baker and Tom Baker, who will play Ebenezer Scrooge and Jacob Marley, respectively. Martin Parsons, who has adopted the novella and directs the show, said, "On Christmas Eve, Ebenezer Scrooge is warned by the ghost of his late partner, Jacob Marley, that he'll be visited by three spirits, Christmas past, Christmas present, and Christmas yet to come. Together they whisk Scrooge away to the past and his happy boyhood Christmas times, to the present to meet Tiny Tim at Bod Cratchit's Christmas feast, and finally to the future and Scrooge's own miserable grave, all attempting to show him the error of his ways. But will Scrooge wake up on Christmas morning a changed man?" Peter Purves, now 86, is also known for playing the first Doctor Who companion and for presenting Cruft's TV coverage. He described Blue Peter as just one of the best jobs in television and said he was lucky enough to film in 27 different countries.
I'm sorry to say that that's all that we have for you this week. When you finish with the recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Many thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, thank you to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Go well.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. And until next time, goodbye. Have a great week.